Patton Oswalt is the star of the new animated film Ratatouille. He plays Remy, the rat who wants to be a gourmet chef. We talked with him about the film last week. Then we asked him to stick around to record an interview, which we're about to hear, about his new comedy CD, Werewolves and Lollipops. It will be released next week. Here's an excerpt from the track, The Best Baby in the Universe.
I got married last year. Oh, it burns! It's fun being married. Although now, she's trying to trick me into having a kid. She's gonna trick me. When we got married, we had an agreement. We were gonna have an invisible baby and name it 10 hours sleep a night. That was our plan. A mute, invisible baby. That was the agreement. He was gonna be awesome. We could do mushrooms in front of him or go to a concert on a Thursday, come back Sunday. He's fine. He made chili. Look at that kid. He's the best.
That's Patton Oswalt from his new comedy CD, recorded at a comedy club in Austin, Texas. Oswalt was one of the stars of the sitcom The King of Queens and created the Comedians of Comedy tour. He first joined us on Fresh Air in 2004 after the release of his first comedy CD. Patton Oswalt, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, the last time we spoke, one of the things we talked about was that you had been doing a bit about President Bush and the war.
Oh yeah.
In your act,
yeah.
And you were getting booed. You were getting booed by people who supported the war, and then for some of the sarcastic things that you were saying, you were getting booed by opponents of the war because they thought that they were taking at face value the things that you were actually saying ironically. So,
yeah.
How has the comedy climate about the president and the war changed?
Well, oddly enough, now it's not fun at all to make jokes about President Bush, because you're not going to get that kind of delicious controversy and because no one's going to stand up at this point and go, excuse me, he rocks. Making fun of people who were into Bush in 2000, now in 2007, they're like Creed fans. They're like, look, I know, okay, the guy was really good looking. I was young. Just, you liked Limp Bizkit. Leave me alone. You know, they've kind of come around, so you have to approach it in a much different way. I'm more fascinated now by the fact that he's still the president. That if the standard for impeachment is like you cover up a burglary or you have extramarital sex, then how is Bush, if that's the standard for impeachment, how is he still the president? It's amazing. He and Cheney are like the Dukes of Hazzard at this point.
In what sense are they like the Dukes of Hazzard?
Well, doesn't it seem like every week they get themselves in these amazing predicaments where you're like, well, ain't no way they're going to get out of this one, and then they jump the General Lee over the Bill of Rights? They should just have, like, they should have footage of him and Cheney walking through the Rose Garden and then freeze frame it and then have Waylon Jennings come on and go, now, can you believe these two guys lied about a war that they did? Ain't no way they're going to get out of this bucket of syrup and went down a mere square. Like, just that's how it is now. It's amazing.
Are you talking about that in your act?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I kind of go off on in the album, is that it did come full circle where you would, and I wasn't ever courting controversy, but I just remember back in 2003, leading up to the war, I was really scared and frightened and concerned, and I had bits about it, and the reason that people were booing me off stage is they were equally scared and frightened and concerned, and they didn't, but they, you couldn't have a dialogue about it back then, because I think the kind of media machine had ratcheted up the hysteria so there could be no debate. Debate equaled treason. And now it's gotten to the point where we were so openly lied to so many times that you come out and say anything about President Bush and people are like, oh, I'm so ahead of you on this. Why are you even bothering to talk about it? You know, 'cause now people are just tired and angry. It is this weird full circle at this point.
You know, one of the things, in addition to acting, you've done is a lot of writing, and you've punched up scripts. And one of the scripts you've worked on, from what I read, correct me if I'm wrong, is the Borat movie. So,
yeah,
what did you do on Borat?
I wrote on that movie for 3 months, when the first director was on it. You know, I had some hiatus. I was still on The King of Queens at the time.
Uh-huh.
And then the first director left, and there was a production shutdown for a few months. So while everybody was waiting around, The King of Queens started up again, and I couldn't go back to the movie. that I had been writing on. And then so when the movie came out, the wonderful WGA, in order to protect me, said, you either give him a writing credit or nothing. And at that point, Sasha and I watched a very early cut of the film like 4 months before it came out in an editing bay. And I was laughing so hard that it was one of those times, and I this isn't an exaggeration, we had to stop the movie so that I could, because I thought I was going to get sick. Like, I was laughing way too hard. I thought I was going to throw up. And I was like, if you guys want to give me a special thanks, I'm totally happy with that. I understand how the scheduling got really crazy. And then WJ was like, they're not going to get away with giving you a special thanks. I was like, no, I want them to give me special thanks on the movie. No, it's either written by or nothing. I didn't get a writing credit. And, you know, I have a few little scenes in there that I wrote stuff on. The driving instructor thing was mine. You know, most of the stuff he's screaming out the window and all the stuff about the steering wheel and just lines here and there. But, you know, so many writers came on and off that movie, and there were so many, like, really, really talented people on it. There were some Simpsons writers early on that were there with me, and then people ended up getting credited that deserved credit, though. You know, really good. Like, Anthony Hines especially was amazing on that. So.
Well, you know, in the driving instructor scene, mm-hmm. he's Sacha Baron Cohen. Borat is getting driving instructions, yeah. And he's driving with the instructor at his side. And he sees women driving, and he's saying, "What? They let you drive in America?"
Well, especially when the guy says, "He goes, let's pull over and have sex," and then the guy says, "Well, no, the woman gets to choose who she has sex with." He goes, "What?" Like, that's such an amazing thing for him.
Is that your line?
I wish that was my... No, my lines were the... Well, remember when he's yelling... I can't repeat them, but he's yelling stuff out the window to the other drivers when he's angry at them. And they are quote-unquote insults, but they're way more insulting to Borat. And then, again, I cannot repeat... I can't say them on the air. I don't want to get you guys fined. And then there's all stuff about when the guy says, you have to have your hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. He goes, but I look like I'm holding down a gypsy. And then goes into some very graphic... And there's also a line about a jar of gypsy tears that I'll just leave at that he says early that was mine. But, I mean, it was such a weird experience to, because we were traveling in New York and West Virginia, and, you know, sort of see the early footage was really amazing.
So it must be, you know, there's so much that seems improvised. Like the driving instructor, for instance, was he a real driving instructor?
Oh, he was. What's amazing about Sasha is he goes over the script. You write for like 10 hours a day because he what he wants to do is drill every single possibility of a response into himself and totally absorb that character the way he does. I mean, it's an amazing process. That way, when he gets out there with these people, with the comedy instructor or the driving instructor, who he doesn't know what they're going to say, but he's prepared for anything that could happen, and then because he's so prepared and he has that base, then he can go off and just riff things right on the spot.
Did it give you any new ideas about comedy to work with him and watch him work?
Oh yeah, it was especially just the fact that his comedy is so not punchline oriented. It's so much more situational oriented. It's that kind of, it was something that I was always trying in my stand-up, but I was so shy and timid about taking it all the way of let the situation build and then kind of let it get out of your control and see where that goes. So in a lot of my, I think on the new CD, not that I'm comparing my CD to the Borat movie because the Borat movie is amazing, but there are moments that you'll see in the CD where I really kind of let I have the plan down so tight that I let it go and let's see what happens.
Who's the comedian who most influenced you?
Growing up, I think my biggest influence was, now that I look back on it, when I was a teenager, I would definitely say like Richard Pryor and Steve Martin. But when I really, now that I've had some time to really look back, it was Bill Cosby. It was the way he could use like volume and silence at the same time. You listen to those early albums and it's amazing. It's like a symphony, and the audience is the symphony, and he's just, I will conduct. It's amazing.
So do audiences respond to you differently now that, you know, you've been on television, you've been in movies, like you're much better known. So do they show up with different expectations and respond to you differently when you perform?
Well, there's definitely, once you've been on TV and you've gotten some, I guess, fame that way, there's an initial like, hey, we're happy to see a guy who's been on TV and who is famous. But then that gets you 15 seconds of excitement, and then you've got to then, you'd better start being funny and original, or you saw what happened with Michael Richards. I'm sure that audience was so happy when he walked out on stage, you know, that, oh my God, this guy's really funny, and then he just kind of disintegrated. So with, you know, with me, I really went out of my way to put out CDs and do the Comedians of Comedy Tour to let people know, I'm glad you like me on King of Queens, and that's a very funny show, but this is a much different thing. This is not an 8 o'clock family-oriented thing I'm doing right now, which, you know, that was more my responsibility. So
Did you ever have a complete meltdown on stage?
Did I ever have a complete meltdown on stage? I've certainly had times where audiences got the better of me, but I don't think I am not courageous enough to like explode and rant and rip people apart the way that, you know, the bad version of that is what Michael Richards did at the Laugh Factory. The good version of that, you can see it on YouTube, there's a comedian named Bill Burr who was facing this horrible audience in Philadelphia, I think it was last year, and he had the most articulate, beautiful, symphonic, it was operatic how he exploded on this crowd and ended up winning them back over. Because you're like, I can't believe this guy is just attacking us this way. It's beautiful. It was like poetry. But I've never had the courage to do either one. I usually either just shut down, or the thing I do when the audience is really going the wrong way is I start talking very quietly. Because when you start talking quietly, it quiets them down. Sometimes silence can be really threatening when you start quieting down. Then they'll go, why is he talking so quietly? And you can end up really refocusing them.
Will people really pay attention when you're talking that quietly? Or at that point, are they just talking over you and ignoring you?
Sometimes that strategy doesn't work. But a lot of times when you start talking quieter and people go, I can't hear you. And you go, well, then you'll have to shut up or you won't be able to hear this. and if you have this look in your face, not like I hate you guys, but it's like, it's all the same to me. I'm walking out of here with your money. So you either watch a show or, you know, eat your fried mozzarella. It's really all the same to me. And then sometimes that kind of indifference, you know, it's like, you know, when you really love someone and they're like, well, whatever. But if you're indifferent towards them, they're like, why is he indifferent towards, you know, and then they get kind of attracted to you. And a lot of times, I hate to say it, crowds are the same way. When you walk up and you're kind of indifferent, they're like, whoa, it makes them pay attention.
Well, Patton Oswalt, great to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for any time. I love doing this show. This is such a relief, so thank you.
Well, it's great to have you.
Well, a lot of the radio that I got to do is, so this is very nice. Thank you.
What is the lot of radio you have to do?
Well, you know, sometimes I go on Flappy and the Bean. Hey, we got Pat Oswald here from Hollywood, California. Hey, Pat, how you doing? Well, all right, we got we're gonna call it our I Hate My Boss Donut Toss. Come on down. So it's just, this is such the difference right now. I'm so happy.
Well, thanks so much for doing our show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Patton Oswalt's new comedy CD, Werewolves and Lollipops, will be released next week. Oswalt is the star of the new animated film Ratatouille. This is Fresh Air.